It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Big House Bleachers Podcast.
Welcome to the Big House Bleachers Podcast, proud member of the Block M Podcast Network, brought to you by Fans First Sports. I'm Michael Smeltzer. I'm here with my co-host, Matt Hartwell, and we have a great show for you guys today. We're talking J.J. McCarthy. We're talking all the weird stuff, transfers, people going to Ohio State. We're talking the good stuff, new coaches, and then we're handing out 2023 superlatives for Team 144. Man, it's going to be a good show. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. As you know, February, never a dull month for me. I got a lot of family stuff going on, but still finding time for all this great Michigan football happenings that are going on. So excited to dive right into it with you, buddy.
Well, our leader and quarterback, Julius James McCarthy III, which is not actually his name, J.J. McCarthy is flying up draft boards. So that's what we're going to start with today. We talked about this before, and as recently as just a few weeks ago, the question was, is JJ going to go in the first round? Now I think it's pretty much undisputed that he's going in the first round. I'll tell you real quick how I see it. I say that there is no way that he falls out of the top 16 picks. That's my floor for JJ. The Seattle Seahawks at 16, if he's there, which he won't be, but if he's there, then he's going to go off the board. There's a little group of teams right there around, 10, 11, 12, 13. You've got Jets, Vikings, Broncos, Raiders. In my mind, there's no way he slips through that little group right there. And then we've even heard people recently saying that he could be the second or third quarterback taken. I don't think that's going to happen, just based on there's a lot of pressure if you're Carolina, Washington, or New England, and you're sitting there with the top three pick. Even if you think JJ might be graded higher than a Drake May or a Caleb Williams or a Jaden Daniels, I think there's just so much pressure in that position that you don't want to be the guy that passes over one of those guys and takes the risk. Only the Detroit Lions have the gonads to make a move like that. And they are not picking in this range. So that's how I see it, Matt. If I had to guess, I would say 11 to Minnesota or 12 to Denver. But I've seen people saying he'll go as high as number 5. I've seen people saying maybe somebody trades up and takes that Charger spot at number 5 and drafts JJ.
Yeah, you know, you and I are kind of lockstep with our thinking on this. I think that there's no way, right, that he falls out of the first round at this point. It's really kind of hilarious, the evolution that this whole J.J. McCarthy NFL draft narrative has taken over the last several weeks, right? I mean, you eventually, like, had him starting out kind of as like, a second-round pick, possibly, maybe a late first, to where now just – all of this buildup has been happening. You've got Jim Harbaugh, you know, with the hyperbole that he could be the first quarterback taken, which, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily possible at this point, but I think that it's no secret how good J.J. McCarthy is at this point. And I'm still feeling really good about my prediction at number 11 to the Minnesota Vikings, right? You know, they've got a lot of stuff happening with Kirk Cousins that needs to be sewn up as far as where they land on some kind of contract with him. I think that his contract is coming to an end in March. So a lot of things happening there. And if I'm Minnesota, I think the smart move is taking a flyer on somebody like J.J. McCarthy, who's got all the intangibles that you look for from your NFL starting quarterback. You know, maybe it doesn't end up to where he's starting for Minnesota at the beginning of this next NFL season. But, you know, that's a guy that if you put the right amount of time and attention into from a training standpoint and getting his body to where it needs to be, that's a guy that's going to lead an NFL franchise one day. I mean, the kid is a winner. He's proven it. Somebody posted the stat the other day, you know, he's lost 3 games since his high school career, you know what I mean? And over half of those losses are coming in his high school playing days. You know, he had 2 losses then, 1 loss since then. So I think J.J. McCarthy is just somebody that you have to look seriously into if you're an NFL executive or an NFL team in general.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. He's clearly the guy that we thought he was. Everybody under-evaluated him and underestimated him based on the fact that he was on a run-first team. And not only a run-first team that really liked to limit plays, limit possessions. And it's wild to me that so many people just look at total stats. They would say, well, total yards, total touchdowns, and they would compare J.J. to these other quarterbacks, and then they would say, well, he's just a game manager. And it's like, yeah, but if you look at the efficiencies, they're all there. He was top of the country in the efficiencies. And the efficiencies take into account what an individual does per play that he's on the field. Now, of course, that's what actually matters, right? When it's like, what can you do per play? And J.J. McCarthy is consistently one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And so I anticipate he'll be off the board in the top 12. Definitely in the top 16. It'll be fun. Michigan hasn't had a quarterback go this high in the draft in a very, very long time, and it'll be fun to actually get that as a Michigan fan.
And what's even more interesting, Mike, is like, when is the last time that we've seen a quarterback with this level of utilization at the collegiate level being so seriously talked about as, you know, a potential top 15, top 10, top 20 pick, whatever have you it may be. But for J.J. McCarthy, you know, to be rising as high as he is and for all of this hype to be surrounding him, while he really didn't have the opportunity to put up such gaudy numbers in college, I mean, it's really unprecedented. So I'm with you. I'm really excited to see how that draft unfolds. I know all of Michigan Nation's going to be just waiting to find out, you know, who wins the J.J. McCarthy sweepstakes, because they're going to be in for a real treat. You know, I think a lot of NFL teams still aren't seeing it coming, but really excited for this kid and what he's going to be able to do at the next level and wherever.
Well, in other draft news, Michigan breaks the all-time record for combine invitees, right? Michigan had 18 guys invited to the NFL combine. That is an all-time record, surpassing the Joe Burrow LSU team, which I believe had 16. I was just poking around curious this morning. I was like, I wonder how many years, how many years it's been where Michigan State has had 18 NFL players drafted total. And so since you have to go back to 2010 to gather 18 Michigan State NFL drafted players, and so they've literally only have had 18 players drafted since 2010. That's a better way to say it. So kind of funny when you think about Michigan's got potentially 18 guys that could get drafted this year alone. So just a little shot at our little brother there. But not all good news when you talk about high caliber Michigan players. Keon Sabb announced that he was hitting the transfer portal. What was your initial reaction when you saw that?
Initial reaction, Mike, is just sadness, right? I mean, you and I have had plenty of conversations about this kid and his potential within the Michigan defense, not just this past season. He was electric this past season, but also just going forward. You know, there was a lot of excitement surrounding him and where he would fit into whatever Michigan does defensively next year in the secondary. And, you know, it sucks to see him go. That's my initial reaction. And upon further analysis, you know, it made a little bit more sense to me. You know, I think that Keon Sabb is somebody last year that showed that he has a very high ceiling, right? He has the opportunity to be one of the better defensive backs on whatever team that he plays for next year. And when you look at kind of the pieces that play into it, you know, you've got Rod Moore and Makari Page coming back. You've got a new coach and Wink Martindale entering the fold. I just think that, like, the allure of some of these other opportunities, some of these other teams that are willing to open up the checkbook for a guy like Keon Sabb just proved to be too much when you're a guy of his skill set, of his talent level, you know, entering a season with even just a little bit of uncertainty. You know what I mean? It can push you to make a decision like that in today's college football landscape. So, you know, first initial reaction, sadness, a little bit more thought put into it. You know, it doesn't entirely not make sense for a guy like him. So, yeah.
What I'm hearing you say is it made you Keon sad. Is that correct?
Absolutely, buddy.
I'm sorry. I'm about to pop out another kid. Well, I'm not personally popping out another kid. My wife is, but the dad jokes are swimming around in my head right now. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to add to what you said. I kind of thought he would be a starter next year. I thought we would find a way to get him on the field, maybe move him into that Mikey Sanders still nickel spot, get Will Johnson and Rod Moore and Keon Sabb and Makari Page, like, all on the field at the same time. It really felt that way. So I don't know. Maybe our man Zeke Berry is ready to step up. Maybe some other guys are ready to step up. But also, you know, some bad news in the secondary. Jaden Smith requested a release from his national letter of intent. I think it had to have something to do with what we're about to talk about here in a little bit, which is the secondary coach situation that was kind of going on, and there wasn't a lot of stability there. But any comments on Jaden Smith, you know, asking out of his letter of intent?
Yeah, you know, Jaden Smith, I feel like, I feel like Michigan has been fortunate up to this point with all of the coaching turnover to not have received more requests from other players asking for the same thing. So I'll say that, but Jaden Smith, you know, particularly, I think he was primarily recruited by Chris Partridge, who he's no longer there, obviously. But in addition to him, you know, everybody that this kid has spoken to, you know, during his time being recruited by the University of Michigan is gone, right? Yeah. So he's being recruited as an athlete, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, he was kind of one of those guys where, you know, as an athlete, you're looking to find a place for him within your current roster, you know, as he develops. And with all of the coaching turnover, I think that he's probably one of the, you know, ones that makes the most sense to request something like that. So I'll say that if it's just him, I'm okay with that. Obviously, you don't want to see any players requesting such a thing, but given the situation and what's been happening, I think it's an acceptable exit for most Michigan fans to stomach at this point.
And then we have a Benedict Arnold that we need to discuss. Joey Velasquez transfers to Ohio State. He actually got a little bit more time on the field than I even realized, you know, when I looked a little bit closer at it. He actually got on the field. What are your thoughts on our old buddy Joey going into enemy territory there?
I mean, what's the deal, dude, right? I mean, normally, anytime I'm not that guy, I'm usually the person that's going to say, you know, well wishes to any player, no matter what they're deciding to do. But I mean, come on, dude, you're going to transfer and walk on to play for Ohio State. You got to believe that, that the folks over there in Columbus are going to try to sponge this dude for any information that he possibly has on Michigan. I get that he's from the area, I believe. I think he's from Columbus or from Ohio, one of the two. So I guess it makes sense from a going home type standpoint. But, I mean, making a transfer from the University of Michigan to Ohio State is just not something that you do. It's not something that frequently happens. I mean, I don't know, dude. I'm really not in support of the move at all. What are your
Well, you know, he's a college athlete. I wish him well. I'm supportive of him. Just kidding. Fuck that dude, man. Fuck him. Like, complete. I don't care. You know, like, this is Michigan, Ohio State, man. You're gonna roll from Ann Arbor to Columbus. You're a traitor, straight up. You know what I mean? They're not gonna do this, but when those natty rings get made, I wouldn't even send him one. I literally wouldn't even send him one. So. You know, it might sound petty to other people that don't understand the rivalry, but this is Michigan, Ohio State. You know,
I wouldn't mind Penn State or something.
Yeah, I don't care. Penn State. Yeah, maybe not Michigan State, but yeah, Ohio State. Like, I would conveniently make sure that his natty ring gets lost in the mail, and you know, he's dead to me. He's joined the ranks of Justin Boren and Greg Madison. I mean, it just a complete traitor. You don't cross that line. It's one line you just don't cross. Let's get to some good stuff here. Let's go one more weird occurrence and then we'll get to some good stuff. So Michigan hired Stephen Adegoke from the Houston Texans, and I even was so committed to this hire that I learned how to say his name. I think I said that right. And then, out of nowhere, Houston swoops in, steals him back from us, makes him an offer he can't refuse, and he decides to stay with the Houston Texans. And it looked like that was going to be one of the first big splash moves by Sharon Moore. Really good hire. I mean, he had just gotten Wink Martindale from the NFL ranks. Also getting Adegoke from the NFL ranks would have really put this thing together. But the good news here is that we had maybe an equally impressive candidate waiting in the wings. Less NFL experience, so that's not as good. But Lamar Morgan, within 24 hours, got hired. He was clearly the other person that was in consideration. He worked under Jesse Minter at Vanderbilt in 2021, then spent 2 years at Louisville. We know that Sharon Moore has the Louisville connections. So there was a lot of things going in Lamar Morgan's favor. Jesse Minter even gave him an endorsement. And so I think we're going to be okay. And of course, we're talking about defensive backs coach here, secondary coach. I think we're going to be good there. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that this was kind of an embarrassment of riches for Michigan in terms of the candidates that they had at their disposal while interviewing for this secondary position, right? Because you've got Edigoke, who is a rising star in the NFL defensive ranks, hasn't been around for that long, was most recently even a grad assistant at Michigan in 2021, back when Aiden Hutchinson and all of them boys were coming up. So, you know, had familiarity with the program, you know, had a lot of positive feedback given about him, had a very good reputation, familiarity with an NFL-style defense, you know, checked a lot of the boxes that Michigan was looking for, positive reputation with the players, all of that good stuff. But on the opposite side, you know, you bring in a guy who's an actual defensive coordinator, combination defensive backs coach over at Louisiana to come in and be your defensive backs coach right now. So I think that's about as good as you can get with someone like Adegoke backing out at the last minute. This guy comes with a very positive reputation, comes with a very positive recommendation from the GOAT himself, Jesse Minter. So having all of that, you know, coupled with his productivity on the defensive side of the ball, coming with his track record, you know, I think Louisiana, obviously not a great program last year, but still, you know, generated some of the best numbers in college football as it pertains to turnovers, interceptions, sacks, things like that. So this is a guy that's very focused on generating turnovers for whatever team that he's coaching. I think that Michigan nailed this hire, even with Adegoke backing out at the last minute the way that he did.
Yeah, and then Sharon's kind of on a roll here with underrated hires. Brian Jean Mary, who was here as the linebackers coach in 2020, went and was the linebackers coach for Tennessee for a year or two. Now he's back. He's a player's guy. Everybody kind of likes him. This defensive staff now all of a sudden has a really good, like, young players coach kind of vibe to it, with the exception of the head guy on defense, right? He has the grumpy old man look. It was funny. I don't know if you saw this picture, Matt, but there's a picture of Sharon Moore and Wink and I want to say it was Scruggs, Greg Scruggs. They were walking into Chrysler, and there's a little screenshot of him. And Wink is just so funny looking, like, because he has like that old military looking vibe about him with these, you know, young swagged out coaches. I really like the dynamic that we're building on the defensive side of the ball all of a sudden.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your last point, Brian Jean Mary, many Michigan fans will recall him for the negative commentary that he left with as it pertains to the Big House the last time he departed. I think he compared it to like a tennis crowd or something like that. So
it was a tennis crowd in 2020. You know, it was 2021 when we kind of turned that around.
You can't take too much to heart when it comes to that statement around that time frame. But, you know, Brian Jean Mary is an incredible recruiter, and I think he's going to do great things for this Michigan program, especially when given, you know, the ability to kind of build some momentum here. You know, he was responsible for helping to bring in Junior Colson and also Jaden Hood. So right there, you know, in terms of with Michigan fans who have just been begging for guys that are just solid recruiters and haven't been able to hang on to them lately, Brian Jean Mary arrives at the perfect time. So especially with all of these NFL guys entering the fold, you know, I think that Sharon Moore has done an excellent job of landing guys that are going to have familiarity with that recruiting aspect of college football, while also adding, you know, their own spice from the NFL defensive side of the football. So I think that he's done an excellent job of of assembling exactly what Michigan football needs from a defensive standpoint with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, so things are trending in the right direction with the coaching staff. I believe we're going to see an uptick in transfer portal additions once these guys have a chance to like really get their footing. It has been a rough offseason, honestly, as far as adding players goes, because nobody's wanted to transfer to Michigan with all of the uncertainty. There's about to be a whole lot of certainty on that coaching staff, and I think that's going to help recruiting and it's going to help transfer portal targets. But there's another piece of news that we need to cover before we get to our superlatives today. Pretty big NIL news. You know, Michigan is going to hire an executive general manager. This is part of an initiative with Altius Sports Partners and also a continued relationship with Learfield. And Michigan is really, you know, putting together a first of its kind role aimed at providing dedicated, specialized expertise to UM's student athletes, coaches, and administration. This position that you originally threw in the show notes, this executive general manager, will enhance educational programming, strategic guidance, and partnerships, setting a new benchmark for how collegiate athletic programs support NIL initiatives. So pretty exciting stuff.
Absolutely, Mike. And it's really, you know, all working towards Sharone Moore's ultimate goal, which he stated in his introductory press conference, which is expand Michigan's NIL footprint, which, you know, I dug a little bit into this Altius sports group that they're collaborating with to this position. And, you know, they've got a great track record under their belt. Over the last year, they've oversaw similar initiatives with programs like Georgia, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Clemson, Auburn, Ole Miss, and Wisconsin. And even most recently, over the last few weeks, you know, they've added programs like Michigan, Oklahoma State, Stanford. So this is clearly a vastly growing operation that's really going to help Michigan build some momentum in the same way towards NIL that a lot of those other programs that I just mentioned are. And the position, you know, it's not going to be strictly overseen by the University of Michigan. This Altius sports group, they're going to be, from my understanding, recruiting, developing, and overseeing the efforts of this guy. And, you know, it's going to be something that's run very, very similarly in the ways that a lot of these other programs are running NIL. So this guy, whoever they end up bringing on to manage this kind of stuff, is going to work hand in hand with Ward Manuel, I assume with Sean McGee, to help Michigan get a little bit more up to speed, a little bit more modern with their approach to NIL, while also not taking away from anything that they're doing with Champion Circle, with Learfield, or any of their other NIL collectives. So this is really exciting stuff.
Yeah, and you got to believe that Michigan's doing everything they can at this point. They have not engaged in the massive pay-for-play initiatives that so many other schools are engaging in. You know, whether you like that or not, it's just a fact. Michigan is not taking that approach. But everywhere else, they appear to be incredibly proactive. And so while they are starting off a little behind because they're not dropping bags on guys, they're doing what they can. You know, Michigan has always been the leaders and the best. They've always put together pretty strong programs when they need to. And so I anticipate that we will be able to get top talent. And I just have a feeling that the Sharone Moore era is going to recruit better than the Jim Harbaugh era. I really have a feeling that's going to happen. And you've got a lot of young kids that are in high school right now that just saw Michigan win 3 straight Big Ten championships and a national championship. And that actually does affect the way you view a program. There's not a kid in high school right now that's sitting there thinking about the 2020 Joe Milton Michigan team. You know, that's just not happening anymore. And so I think the coaching staff has a perfect arena for going out and grabbing talent. And if we can put together some NIL initiatives like this, we're going to go a long way. So let's get into what I'm most excited about for this show, which is our 2023 Superlative Awards. Every year, you and me, Matt, you know, we've been doing the show for 2 years now, so I can say every year, you know, this is our second time we're doing our postseason superlative awards. We have basically all the same awards that we did last year. And so let's go ahead and start with the Hassan Haskins Workhorse Award, representing the team's most improved player. And so this is like, you know, most improved, but also has a little workhorse, you know, element to it. So I'm going to let you go first. Who is your Haskins Award most improved player?
Absolutely, Mike. And when I think Haskins, right, I think of a guy that's done everything that they can to elevate their playing ability. Shout out to the man himself, Hassan Haskins, transitioned from a linebacker into what we knew as one of Michigan's great running backs at that time. So when I think of this award, I think of that exact same mentality that the boy Haskins had. And this year, I got to give it to Jalen Harrell, man. He is, nice. In my mind, very similar to Hassan Haskins and the way that he carried himself during his time with the University of Michigan. From last year, nearly doubled his sack numbers. I think he ended with 3.5 or something in 2022. This year rose that number to 6.5, despite, I haven't even had a chance to fact check this, but I think that his utilization might have even been close to very similar or maybe even less than what he had the year before. As you know, Michigan split a lot of those snaps up among four guys. So for Jalen Harrell to do what he did last year, generating two forced fumbles, a lot of key plays that were very important to Michigan's success, pretty much leading that defensive end, outside linebacker room for Michigan, I got to give this one to my boy Jalen.
I like that pick. I went a different direction. So you went with a guy that got a lot of snaps, a lot of playing time last year, which I think for most improved, it's fun to do that. I went with a guy that didn't get a ton of action the year before, but all of a sudden became one of the best players on the team. So let me ask you, what does the greatest saxophone player of all time and the Haskins Award winner for me this year have in common?
I don't know. They
both have the same name. Kenny G. Let's go. Kenneth Grant. You know what I'm saying, man? Like, this dude, he kind of hit our radar. Like, we knew he was going to be good, but he hit our radar when he went number one overall in the spring football draft. And it was like, hold on a second. Like, number one overall? Like, what are we talking about here? And then this year, he became one of the best defensive linemen in all of college football. And that's from, you know, the year before that, where he was not one of the top 20 names that we would even talk about on the team. And so my Haskins Award winner goes to Kenneth Grant.
I fucking love that pick, honestly. You know, and Kenneth Grant, even with such talent along that defensive line this year, you got to find a spot for him among these awards that we have. So, you know, I'm glad that you've recognized him in that light as being one of the most improved, because it's true. You know, he was very highly spoken of last year, but we didn't see too much of him. That is during his freshman year. And then during this most recent season, he had one of the biggest leaps that you can see out of anybody. So not lost on me is that fact there. So excellent pick.
And all right, let's keep it moving. Let's go to the Desmond Howard catch of the year. I've got some nominees. I'm going to lay the nominees on the table. You let me know if I missed anybody here. I started off with an interception that didn't even count because it was such a good catch. Josh Wallace's early season interception. I want to say it was it week one, maybe against East Carolina. I think that might be right, but it was a, you know, early on, Josh Wallace, that crazy sideline interception where the defender or the offensive player that became the defender had a toe on the line when he touched the ball. And so, like, it didn't count, but to me, it would have been one of the greatest interceptions of all time. So that's my one of my nominees. You've got the Cornelius Johnson bobble catch at Bowling Green, where the, you know, the lights are on, he bobbles it, it ends up being a touchdown. The Roman Wilson helmet catch at Nebraska, quite possibly one of the best catches in all of the, you know, college football this season. And then if you're going to go impact, you've got Roman Wilson's touchdown in Ohio State and the leap against Alabama in the Rose Bowl. So I got five catches right there that I wanted to spotlight. Did I leave any out for you, Matt?
Well, you know, if we're naming the guy Josh Wallace in there as a candidate, I think it's only fair that we throw in Will Johnson's interception against Washington in the national championship game early in the first quarter. Will Johnson, you know, gets a hand on it, has the incredible wherewithal to get his hand. And I've argued with so many people on social media about this catch over the last month, has the wherewithal to get his other hand underneath the ball before making contact with the ground. I think that was just one of the most excellent catches of this past season, if you're including defensive backs or just the defense in general into this category, which you should. But I think amongst all of those that you just named and Will Johnson, that is the collective right there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so let's take some off the board. Let's go ahead and take the defensive guys off the board. But even though they were great catches, I feel like catch of the year, it's named after Desmond Howard. I think we got to go offense. I'm going to take the Cornelius Johnson bobble catch off the board. Are you okay with that? It was spectacular. It was a good bobble, but that game was so painful to watch. I don't even want to think about that game.
Agreed.
Now, the Roman Wilson touchdown against Ohio State was actually a better throw than it was catch. You know, that was a JJ throw. And actually, some people would tell you it wasn't a catch, right? Some people would tell you that was an interception. And so I'm going to take that off the board. And so that leaves us with the Roman Wilson helmet catch, which was just strength and precision and just a fantastic catch. And then the leap against Alabama in the Rose Bowl. So I know which one I want out of those two, but I'm going to give you a chance to say which one you think is the catch of the year.
You know, I can't bring myself to go away from the helmet catch against Nebraska. I just feel like that would be such a difficult catch to replicate. It's something that it's a catch unlike anyone will probably see for a long time. You know, I mean, the length of the catch, I mean, he threw it, I forget how many yards, but it was a deep pass. And for Roman Wilson to be standing there in the back of the end zone, go up, make the catch against the helmet of the defender, and then continue to be taken to the ground, only to still retain that possession. I don't know if there's anything that's surpassing that in my mind. It's going to the catch against Nebraska for me.
I can't argue with that. It really is just a matter of what you choose to give the most value and weight in this discussion. That catch that you picked was a touchdown, which adds to it. The level of difficulty was 10 out of 10, which adds to it. And so if you're just taking a snapshot of a play, I'll give you that. That's the catch of the year. I'm going to go with Roman in the Rose Bowl just because some things are larger than life. You know what I mean? That Rose Bowl game was, in my opinion, perhaps the biggest game of this 3-year run that we've had. I know Ohio State's kind of that's like a different category, but really beating Bama and getting over the hump against the SEC, winning the first college football playoff game, that was the biggest game. It was the biggest game. And then that very well may have been the biggest moment of the biggest game. And so that catch was just so special. And the way that he made a move after he brought it down, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. So you're going with the helmet catch. I'm going with the leap in the Rose Bowl.
I believe it was even tipped too, right? That catch against Alabama.
Right. Right. And the tip maybe even helped the play, right? Because it kind of got the DB off center a little bit. All right. I'm glad we did that because they both get recognition that way. All right, let's move on to the Bench Mason Award. This is for the team's grittiest player, Bench Mason. Who are you going with?
Absolutely. And I think the last time we did these awards, I gave this one to Blake Corum, I think, which, not taking anything away from Blake the Great here, but I'm going to give it this year to Max Bredesen, right? And there's only a small faction of the Michigan faithful that will understand what we're talking about with this. But, I mean, Max Bredesen was just everywhere that you needed him to be this past season. And, you know, it's only fitting that the Bench Mason Award, in my mind, this season goes to the team's fullback, which was Bredesen. Never really carried the ball or anything like that, but was just so crucial to what Michigan tried to do this year with its blocking schemes. Max Bredesen was constantly on the field, constantly getting snaps thrown his way, and he always delivered on doing exactly what his job was, which was to hit people all year long, and he certainly took enough of those lumps to qualify for this award for me here today. So, Max Bredesen, you are awarded the Bench Mason Award per Matt Hartwell today.
There's a few names that I'd like to consider. Blake Corum was on my list. Absolutely. If you're watching the video version of this, you guys can see I have the blood dripping down his face picture of Blake Corum. I mean, it doesn't get any grittier than that. Another guy to consider was A.J. Barner. A.J. Barner was really, upfield laying down dirty blocks against everybody, making, you know, opening plays up, had a couple really big catches on the season. He worked really hard, earned himself probably a draft spot in this year's NFL draft. Another guy to consider is Drake Nugent. You know, just the nature of playing the center position means you got to be a little gritty, and we never heard his name because he was in there taking care of business. Also, Carson Barnhart, he was put in a position that was not his natural spot in the line. He got beat several times, especially I'm thinking about Chop Robinson, Penn State, kind of exposed him. He definitely got beat, but he showed grit and determination to always come in, and he made big plays in big moments. But the guy that I'm going to give it to is also Max Bredesen. There's no other guy to give this award to. Max Bredesen was clearly the grittiest player. And, you know, I'm sorry, but you got a tight end / fullback on a Harbaugh team, like, that's already going to be my favorite guy on the team. Are you kidding me? So Max Bredesen, Bench Mason, grittiest player award.
I love it. Not nearly the size of Sir Bench Mason, but had all of the heart in this year's team. So got to get the grittiest player.
All right, let's move on to the Jabril Peppers Swiss Army Knife Award. There's a few guys I thought of for this one. I'm going to just tell you right now, I'm going Mikey Sainer still. My boy Mikey S. I just think that he epitomizes what a Swiss Army knife looks like on defense. Oh, shit. I forgot about somebody that I actually might want to give it to. Let me hear yours.
Damn, you're going to take the award back from Mikey Sainer still?
No. Mike can have it. Mikey can have it. But I'll tell you who I want to give. I'll give a shout out to Michael Barrett. Michael Barrett was the guy that I didn't quite think of when I was brainstorming this. He's a pretty versatile defensive player. He would drop back in coverage. He'd get in the backfield. He's a good tackler. And then on offense, Samaj Morgan has a good Swiss Army knife vibe about him. He does a lot of things, but his utilization wasn't quite there. And then also, I'm going to pick him for one of our later awards. And so I think it was just fun to go with Mike Sanders still.
Absolutely. I've got a slightly more prestigious award in mind for Mikey. So I did not elect to take him for the Swiss Army knife, although him and Samaj are both guys that I consider for this shout out. But I'm going to go with my pick. I think when we did our mid-season awards, I picked this guy for this spot, and I'm going to continue to let him hold it after his performance in the national championship to help us seal the win. I'm going Donovan Edwards, baby. I think that that he was a guy this season that did everything that Michigan asked him to do, whether it was running the ball eight times, whether it was catching the ball eight times, whether it was going out and catching a block, whether it was, you know, some sneaky trick play. I think that Donovan Edwards was, you know, the type of keep them guessing player option that that Michigan always had out on the field, and it really benefited them, not despite the fact that it didn't always show up in the stat sheet. You know, Dono was constantly turning in 70 to 80 performance outings, just when you take into account all-purpose yards, receiving, and rushing. So I think Dono, for just the versatility that he was able to show after primarily serving as mostly a running option the year prior, I think that I give it to him this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would push back on that a little bit just because he had so, like, just such a stretch in there in the middle of the season where he just didn't seem to show up. And, like, but that's splitting hairs, you know. We've seen him do a lot of versatile things in the past 3 years. And so I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. He's a versatile player. He's good to go. So, and yeah, by the way, I might give Mikey Sanders still a more prestigious award later in the show as well. There's one that I think just has to go to him. So he might get two from me. The Freshman Freak Award. I think this one's pretty obvious, actually. I think there's one guy that's a freshman freak. Who you got for this?
I mean, I think it's got to be unanimous, right? I'm going Samaj Morgan. He's got to register some award on this segment we've got. And, I mean, he outshined any other freshman that touched the field for Michigan this year. So who else but Samaj? Y'all have a great day.
Yeah. Most surprising player, too, this year, honestly. Like, we didn't really know which one of the freshman receivers would step up. Samaj was... I mean, he was on my radar, but I didn't think he would become such an integral part of this offense. The dude's just clearly a playmaker. Excited to see what kind of jump he can make next season. Samaj Morgan gets the Freshman Freak Award. Now for one that's a little more fun, and you could go a couple different directions with, the Sophomore Standout. So I'm going to go ahead and say that there's three guys that you could pick for this award. There's probably more, but there's three that really just rise to the top when I think about this. You got the interior D lineman duo, Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham. And then you've got Will Johnson. Will Johnson, true sophomore, just, you know, five-star talent, huge playmaking ability. To me, it's one of those.
Don't forget about the big potato now.
Who's the big potato?
Colston Loveland, baby. Idaho. Born and raised.
Oh, yeah. I was like, who the fuck is the big potato? Okay, I like that. We're riding with that nickname. I did forget about Colston Loveland. I did forget about him. He absolutely deserves some shine. Good call out, Matt. So between those four, it's actually really close. All four of those guys are comparable in their impact on the game. I'm going Mason Graham. I think he deserves a superlative. This is the one I'm giving him. Who are you going with?
So Tough pick. I'm going with one that you've already mentioned, buddy, and he just needed a spot somewhere on my awards this year. But I'm going Kenneth Grant. I think that in terms of all of those guys that you just mentioned, I think that he stood out the most, I want to say. And I mean, all of them stood out, though it's kind of nitpicking at this point when you get in between the lines and all that. But I think Kenneth Grant made some of the biggest splashes this year in terms of just being a sophomore on this team. So Kenny G, sophomore standout for me this season.
Yeah. All right, let's go. Ojabo Award, this year's biggest surprise. And so I've got three guys that I can kind of pick from here. I hate to do this because he just transferred, but I think it's Keon Sabb. I actually think it's Keon Sabb, but you could say Kenneth Grant, right? But Kenneth Grant's already getting recognition all throughout this thing. And now if you want to pick the biggest surprise in like a moment, you know, which I think I'm going to do this because I don't want to give Keon Sabb a superlative with him transferring. I just don't want to do it, you know. I'm going to pick a moment for this award. So I'm going to make my own rule here. Tyler Morris in the Rose Bowl, man. That Tyler Morris touchdown where he just turned on the Jets and it was like, what the heck? Like, where did that come from? Like, where has that been all season? I mean, he's been good, but he showed us he has an ability to be great. And so I'm going with Tyler Morris in the Rose Bowl for the biggest surprise.
I love it. I'm and cue the sad Titanic music, right? But I did have Keon Sabb penciled in for this award. If I'm not going with Keon Sabb, obviously he isn't here to accept this award. He's off God knows where. But I'm giving it to my boy, Quentin Johnson. I think that Quentin Johnson showed up, you know, during a time where nobody even pictured him as somebody that would be utilized across this roster. But he made some tremendous plays this season, you know, including the forcing the fumble that led to the Josh Wallace recovery in the Rose Bowl, if you're just going by a single moment, but also just achieved a very high snap count, you know, whether that be due to a lot of the injuries that took place for Michigan football early in the season or just needed rotational depth snaps. Quentin Johnson was always there. He was always making some good plays last season. And I'm going to give it to Quentin.
Man, that's a great call out. I like that. That's a good pivot, so neither one of us have to give it to Keon Sabb. I love the guy. I wish him well. I'm just irritated that he's transferring, and I don't want to give superlatives to guys that are transferring out of the program. Call me petty, but that's just what it is. But I'll tell you something I am really passionate about. This next award, the Olu Oluwatimi Award. This goes to the best offensive lineman of the year, and I'm going to set a motion in front of you, Matt. You can accept it or decline it, but I would like to rename this award moving forward in honor of the guy that I pick as the best offensive lineman of the year. He fell down with a broken leg in the Ohio State game, and the Big House began to chant his name. Let's go, Zach. Let's go, Zach. He got a unanimous consensus All-American. He is a Michigan man through and through. He's been there year in and year out as our leader, Zach Zinter. I would like Zach Zinter to win the first ever Zach Zinter Award on the Big House Bleachers podcast. Are you good with that?
I love it. I love it. I think that, you know, he had just such an iconic year in terms of being the anchor along this Michigan offensive line, a very good Michigan offensive line, have you. And I think for just how his story has played out, how it ultimately culminated in winning a national championship, and just for what a big part of it he was, I think that you can't get a more deserving guy to rename an award for than the big Zint, Zach Zinter. Give it to the man.
Let's go. It doesn't get any better than that. Moving on to the Golden Buffs Award. The Golden Buffs goes to the best defensive back of the year. I'd love to give it to the guy that kind of takes credit for the Buffs and sells Buffs t-shirts and all that. Will Johnson, he's a good candidate. Rod Moore, walk off against OSU, he's a good candidate. But you already know who I'm going with, Matt. Who are you going with for this award?
I'm going with the only guy that makes sense if you're talking about who the best defensive back on this team was. And it's Mikey Thamer still, buddy. You don't get a much better season out of a defensive back, just in general, than what we saw from Sir Mikey Thamer still this year. And I think that he's just one of, we'll look back on him. I've said it time and time again. We will look back on him and his legacy as one of the best in Michigan football, you know. So I'm giving it to Mikey Thamer still, without a doubt.
People are under-evaluating his impact on the team this season and what it means. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of defensive players in Michigan history that have had an impact like he's had this season. I mean, you've got Charles Woodson, Aiden Hutchinson, and then maybe like Lamar Woodley up there with him. And I don't need people yelling at me on Twitter. I know there's a lot of other good defensive players. I screwed up and I put Jabril Peppers on my Mount Rushmore a few weeks ago, and people ate me alive. Actually, if I had to redo that, I'd put Lamar Woodley above Peppers, but we don't need to get into all the Ty Law talk and all that. My point is, Mikey Sainristil still is a legend among legends. He absolutely wins this award. The Golden Buffs go to him. Now let's go to the Hutch Award. The Hutch Award is, this is exciting because Michigan's had really good defensive lineman play for a few years in a row now. This goes to the greatest defensive lineman on the team this season. Matt, I'll let you do the honors because I'm genuinely curious which direction you're going to go in.
Yeah, Mike. And to me, I'm going to go with, you know, the guy that was pretty much the highest graded on the team if you pay attention to things like PFF and stuff like that. I'm going Mason Graham. I think that, you know, his ceiling is just through the roof. He was everywhere in terms of just a defensive lineman standpoint over this past year. Had all of the great traits that you get from Kenneth Grant, but also the elite run-stopping ability, while also just that excellent pass rush. I think this guy is the total package, and I think that combined with Kenny Grant, he's going to continue to be, you know, one of the great leaders that that we see as a part of Michigan football going forward. And just so impressed with his season last year. So I'm giving it to Mason Graham.
I can't argue with that. He was definitely one of the names that I considered. Huge shout out to Braden McGregor, Josiah Stewart, Derek Moore, and Jalen Harrell on this team. Those four edge players were, they're all kind of the same caliber of player. Like, you know, any given day you could pick any one of those four that was like the guy on this team. But for the best defensive lineman on this team, you got to go to the interior. And I surprised myself a little bit when I picked, because I assumed Mason Graham or Kenny Grant, like that's who I'm going to go with. And then I let it settle a little bit. And I'm going to go with the forgotten guy that it's hard to believe coming into the season that this guy would be an afterthought on this team. And by the way, I mean, no disrespect, he's not really an afterthought, but there's just so many other names that we bring attention to. But there's no overstating the impact that Chris Jenkins had on this team. I mean, he is just a leader of men. He's an eccentric individual. He's funny. He's smart. He played hard, and he made an impact every single game I'm going Chris Jenkins for the Hutch Defensive Lineman Award. And I'll be honest, the fact that he's a senior on his way out played a factor. I mean, Mason Graham and Kenny Grant, they're going to be getting acknowledgement from us next season. So I'm giving this one to Chris Jenkins on the way out the door.
Absolutely. I love that pick. And, you know, in terms of just talent level, I think that him and Mason Graham were just lockstep. I mean, you had, and that's no shade to Kenny Grant, right? I mean, he had some excellent plays that stood out this past year. But in just terms of all-around gameplay from an interior defensive lineman standpoint, what you look for with run stopping, with just all-around playmaking ability from an interior defensive lineman perspective, I think it doesn't get much better in college football than what we saw last year from Mason Graham, but also from Chris Jenkins. And without Chris Jenkins making that decision to come back, like Wolverines have done the past couple of years, ensuring the success of the team, we don't get that success that we saw last year. So I think that's an excellent pick.
And then let's round it out with the Braylon Edwards offensive MVP. To me, there's a triumvirate of players here that we can pick. You got the quarterback, the running back, and the receiver. I think those are it's pretty clear those are the guys that you give acknowledgement to. I'm not forgetting the big potato again. He's good.
If you remember, Mike, I added two more awards to this segment.
Oh, I might have missed it. That's okay. I'll let you intro the last two awards. So let's do the offensive MVP. You want to?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Braylon Edwards, offensive MVP. It's got to be Blake Corum. I tried to give it to McCarthy. I tried to give it to Roman Wilson, but it's Blake Corum. There's just no way around it. It is.
It's absolutely Blake Corum. And, you know, that was part of the inspiration for creating a couple of these next honorable mention awards that I've thrown in here. But Blake Corum, I mean, the heart and soul of the team. What more can you say about the guy? Promised the national championship to Michigan, you know, something that that the Wolverines haven't seen since 97, and delivered upon that promise, all on his way to gashing up his face, to, you know, scoring some iconic touchdowns, having some iconic sound bites and moments. I mean, Blake Corum is going to be looked at in every light that Charles Woodson was probably looked upon with 10, 20 years from now. So I think that that Blake Corum absolutely gets this award. And just a couple other honorable mention awards, Mike. I'll let you throw these in on the fly here, but we've also totally got Mr. Reliable and Most Valuable Michigan Man.
So all right, I got my Mr. Reliable. I got it locked and loaded.
Mr. Reliable too. We've already referenced him in a weird light a couple other times during this show. Who's your Mr. Reliable, buddy?
Mine hasn't been brought up yet, but I'm giving it to Trevor Keegan. Trevor Keegan, Mr. Reliable. Always in there, always doing well. Always, you know, you never have to worry about him. You know he's gonna dominate on the line. Very consistent. One of the best offensive linemen in the country for a couple years in a row now. Love my man, Trevor Keegan, Mr. Reliable.
I love it. I love that you went with Keegan for that. For me, I had to find a way to squeeze the big potato in somewhere. Cleveland, they went to that guy in so many instances this season where they needed somebody to make a catch. And Colson Loveland was always there, you know, to pick up the tough yards, to get the tough first downs when we were wondering how the hell we were going to convert. So Colson Loveland needed to find his way onto this list somewhere. So Colson Loveland is my Mr. Reliable.
Hell yeah! What is the other award? I don't have it written down. I can't remember what we talked about.
Most Valuable Michigan Man. And, you know, this is essentially just a player that's so crucial to his team's success just as a Michigan man and what he stands for the team. So being that J.J. McCarthy was not the BHB offensive MVP. It's almost like the JJ McCarthy award at this point, because I just couldn't leave JJ awardless for this segment. You know, especially with all the hype that's coming out about how great he is as a quarterback. You know, it's only right that we give some shine to our excellent quarterback that helped lead us, that did everything that was asked of him, and that was a true Michigan man over the course of this entire season. So, most valuable Michigan man, JJ McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is the JJ McCarthy Award. We might just call it that for years to come. Yeah, I mean, honestly, a couple of guys deserve awards named after him. We might reevaluate our names after this season. Yeah, that's like the Golden Boy Award, right? The Michigan Man Award. If you give JJ offensive MVP, then this goes to Corum. If you give Corum offensive MVP, then this goes to JJ. You basically just have to acknowledge both of these guys. So yeah, I'm in full support of it. I say JJ McCarthy. And actually, that reminds me, there's a piece of news that we didn't even talk about. Let's wrap up the show with it since we're talking about quarterbacks. Backup quarterback Jack Tuttle was approved by the NCAA for his 7th year of eligibility, and all signs are pointing towards that he's returning to Michigan. I don't anticipate a transfer here, and so Tuttle's back, and it's kind of crazy. That would kind of make him the starter right now, right? I mean, he technically was the number two quarterback this season, I believe. Alex Orji might have a thing or two to say about that, but now you've got this reliable, experienced guy, Jack Tuttle, in the quarterback room. You've got Alex Orji, who's clearly the best athlete in the quarterback room, may need some time to polish off his passing game. You've got Davis Warren, who has beaten leukemia, so he can beat anything. Love Davis Warren. You've got Jaden Davis coming in, who will be the highest ranked and highest profile quarterback in that room, but probably needs some time to develop. And then Jaden Dennegal, who's kind of a combination of the rest of them. You know, he's a guy that has shown some upside. And so the quarterback room is looking decent all of a sudden with this addition of Jack Tuttle. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you would think that with Tuttle receiving that waiver from the NCAA that, you know, he would be the likely candidate to start for the Maize and Blue when the season kicks off. But, you know, that being said, there's going to be a heated quarterback competition that takes place, and the guys that are under him that are fighting for time, Alex Orji, Jaden Dennegal, newcomer Jaden Davis, no slouches, right? And back when Tuttle had applied for this waiver, I put out a little poll on social media just to see kind of what Michigan Nation's thoughts were. If Tuttle were to get granted this waiver of eligibility, you know, who would be their favorite to lead the team in this upcoming year? And it was Alex Orji by a landslide, I think by 70-80% of the vote. People want to see Alex Orji under center going into next season, you know, so it'll be interesting. I still think that Tuttle is a guy with all of the talent and intangibles to lead a Michigan team in a similar way of which JJ McCarthy possibly would. But I also think that Alex Orji adds a little bit of spice to an offense that, you know, could stand to look a little bit different maybe next year. You know, I think that he almost presents like a method of surprise that a lot of other teams haven't seen. So I'll be eagerly awaiting to see how that position battle turns out, and even more eagerly awaiting to see who's under center come spring game. Because even though we talked heavily about Tuttle and Orji, you know, there's still guys and Jaden Dennegal, and who received a lot of snaps last year, by the way, and Jaden Davis, who are going to push the bounds of this thing. So it makes for a really exciting competition, if I'm being totally honest.
I mean, you got to think that by the next year, so, you know, not this upcoming year, but the year after that, you got to think that Jaden Davis is probably the guy that's under center if everything goes according to plan. So the question is, who gives us the best opportunity to win? I'm not so sure that it's not Jack Tuttle, honestly. But I will admit, and I understand why people don't get excited about that. I mean, Alex Orji is much more exciting. If he comes out there and is slinging the rock and he's hitting receivers downfield, then everybody's going to be thrilled because we already know what he can do with his legs. We might see a two quarterback system, which I don't love. We might see what I'm hoping we don't see, because we've got Texas coming to town in week two, is a confusion around who the starter is. Yeah, I would love for somebody to win that job, play well, and just be in that position, whether that's Jack Tuttle, because we know Tuttle's ceiling might be a little bit lower, but maybe he just doesn't turn the ball over, commands the offense. Donovan Edwards is on this team, you know, like, we might be okay with Tuttle under center. While, yeah,
he definitely enables Sherrone Moore and Kirk Campbell to run the offense more similarly to what they've done in these past couple of years with JJ. Now, obviously, he's not JJ, so there's going to be limitations to that, but it enables them to keep things quietly similar to what they've done in recent years, whereas Alex Orji presents like a totally different vantage point. So it's going to be really interesting. I think that really, no matter who wins the starting job, I think that it'll say enough about just the job being won in general. So I'm just really excited to see how it plays out. Really excited, like I mentioned, to see the spring game, to kind of see a little bit more uncorked as far as what we're working.
I'll tell you straight up that little zone read with Alex Orji and Donovan Edwards is going to be a nightmare for defenses to try to guard against. You know what I mean? There was actually one in the Natty where I thought there was the second one that Orji had. You know, he was in for two plays like we did a couple times, and I think he actually missed. He should have handed it off to Donovan Edwards. I think Dono might have had a third touchdown had he handed it off. But to me, like, as a defender, if you have Donovan Edwards and Alex Orji in the backfield, I mean, that's tough to guard. But the question is, can Orji become a true passing threat? I know we've seen him in the spring game and in practice and stuff, but no, we need to see him in a game throw the ball and throw the ball well and make reads and not turn it over. If he can do that, I'm 100% on board. Alex Orji's the guy. But if he's turning the ball over, if he's throwing it behind receivers, then you got to get Tuttle in there or give Jaden Davis a shot. So we'll see. Orji's going to transfer if Tuttle's like the starter or Orji's gone. Well, and I wouldn't blame him. Like, he's such an elite athlete. He's got to have a shot somewhere. So I would love for Orji to be the guy just so we can see what he's made of.
Agreed. 100%.
Well, that does it for this week. It was a fantastic episode. That was the Big House Bleachers podcast. That's Matt Hartwell. I'm Michael Smeltzer. As always, go blue.
Go blue.